Hello and welcome to episode one of the second season of the TechLash podcast. I'm very pleased to welcome today Thomas Huchon, who is Paris-based and has been working feverishly these past few years on what we now call the TechLash and what the French call the GAFA. We're going to come to that, and how all of this has sparked what we can call an international investigative journalism ecosystem. So a brief intro to the TechLash podcast. The TechLash is the lash against the big tech companies, and it has been mounting and mounting. This is season two. There's a season one of 11 episodes, both in French and English, that you do well to sample. I'd like now to welcome Thomas and have him introduce himself and his investigative reporting, which has spanned print, video, and a documentary film in the past few years. So welcome, Thomas.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. It's very nice to be with you. And actually, yeah, my name is Thomas Huchon. I'm a French journalist and documentary filmmaker. And it's true that what we started investigating a few years ago brought us to some kind of a much wider perspective on the impact of on tech companies that, yes, in French we call the GAFAs. For me, everything started with the fake news. It means that during the year 2014, I was very interested in something that we did not call yet fake news. That was called conspiracy theories. And the spreading of all these false narratives on the internet got my attention. We did a first investigation to try and understand how these lies were fabricated and distributed online. And all of this brought us to understand that the problem was not so much the producers of this fake news that always existed and will always exist. The problem was the new tools that were at their disposal to spread all of these contents. And of course, during all of this investigation, we found that there was at least a responsibility, small or big, it depends on the point of view, of all of these internet companies in the problems that we are facing now, and that somehow are threatening also the concepts of democracy.
That's a very excellent point you make in starting this conversation, that it stemmed from the fake news problem, and you're right to say that it always existed. There's a sort of misconception that journalism was always very full of rectitude and truth, and that's not true. Yellow journalism in the 19th century existed, and before then, even in the pamphlet eras in the 18th century, there was a problem of fake news. What did change, you're exactly right, is the tools and the fact that for the first time, the propagators, from a technical standpoint, have skirted all responsibility. And this, interestingly enough, we're just a few weeks after the passing of Senator John McCain. He is the author of the Telecoms Act of 1996, which doesn't regulate, actually, the internet, because the United States then thought that regulation would stymie growth, so they let these companies do pretty much whatever they wanted, and we're now almost 25 years later left with what we have, which is companies that in French you call GAFA, so it's Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon. In English we call them FANG, so we inverse, but it's the same thing. And it's what I call the platform nation, and I've written, which I'll link to this, a post that's meant to spark conversations on digital feudalism and the fact that the user is, in a sense, the vassal of the master platforms. So what's interesting to me is to understand now what I call this international ecosystem of sorts, which has sparked. And you were at a very interesting festival called the Byline Fest this summer. I'd like you to tell us first how you met all of the people that you were with at the festival, because it's not a common sort of meeting process.
No, it's something that's very interesting. I think that 30 years ago, we, the few journalists that go early on all of these stories of the mixture between fake news, tech companies, and the threat of to democracy. But it's because we were able to see the work that was done by other ones in other countries that we realized that somehow we were not alone. It means that all of this story starts in Switzerland, this Cambridge Analytica scandal that everybody's talking about now, with a Swiss-German journalist called Hannes Grassinger, and he was working with a tech specialist called Paul-Olivier de Hey. And what's weird is that this guy, Paul-Olivier de Hey, was somehow the connection between all of us. Because after working with Hannes Grassinger, who wrote this great piece in Das magazine that was produced in the Vice Motherboard blog, and after this came all of the work of the British newspaper, The Guardian, with the great and brilliant journalist Carole Cadwallader. And on the other side of the channel, there was me, the French guy, who was trying to put together not an investigation per se, but a movie telling the investigation. And what's very interesting is that we all entered this story with different point of views, but with the same question: what is behind the screen when I click on a button on the internet? Yep. And what goes behind this? And how does this work? And are people able to use this tool to manipulate us? And asking these questions and starting to get some answers, I think that we all got the same focus. It's like, yes, internet can be, and the social networks, for example, can be something great. If you look back at the Arab Springs, we all thought that Twitter was great because it allowed to put away a few dictators. But a few years after, I think that the conservative and the most extreme right people on the planet got also a very good understanding on these tools. I just want to say something that's very specific to France, but that gives a very good perspective to the new challenge that we are facing. In France, the law that gives the guidelines for the press is coming from the late 19th century. So it's a law that is 150 years old. And for the first time in 150 years old, we had to amend it. We had to do some changes, because the challenges that we were facing were so much different. So I think that the rise of television, of radio, brought some changes in the perception of media distribution. But internet really changed the game. And it changed the game totally with something that's very weird. It's like everybody can speak, even unknown people can have a great megaphone to spread their ideas. And somehow, I think that that's bringing the possibility for people with bad intentions to use a very good tool.
Yeah, and you mentioned conservatives and the fact that they kind of discovered later than most how to manipulate these tools. I guess it also goes back to personal responsibility on the one hand, but on the other, it also means that There is a corporate responsibility that's been skirted so far, where if you go back to print, there was always the letters to the editor from the readers, except they were editorially screened. Not all of them got to be in the paper. And this is where these platforms conveniently forget their role and always say, when it suits them, oh, I'm like the post office or I'm like the telephone company, I cannot be held responsible. Well, it's not the same thing, and I think most people now recognize this. A lot of very prominent senators in Washington, chief among them, Senator Mark Warner, who I've been chatting with on Twitter about this, is a former technology executive and entrepreneur. So he understands this very well. And we are going to see this year a lot of changes because these companies now recognize that they need help. Even Mark Zuckerberg last week penned an op-ed on Facebook where he said in so many words, I thought we were going to be able to do this ourselves. You know what? We cannot. We need help. This is a very rare admission of impossibility on their side to handle things from a purely technical standpoint. And I think it has a lot of repercussions. I was very surprised to see very little coverage on this in the English language press worldwide, but also in the French language press worldwide. I don't think people understand that this is a big move for Facebook to admit that they do not have all the answers.
Yes, of course. Of course, it changed. But I think that somehow the problem is there. We don't help accountable all of these companies for their behavior, for their responsibilities. And I'm a little bit tired and fed up of all of these big tech companies coming to tell us they apologize for what they did and that they didn't know what they were doing. I think there's some kind of contradiction. When a company makes billions of dollars in advertisement revenue in a year and comes to explain afterwards that it didn't understand what was happening, either they are geniuses and they win a lot of money, either they are the dumbest guy on the earth and they don't win any money. So I think there's a contradiction in this, and I would like, yes, of course, more coverage and more scrutiny and more questions to be asked on this particular matter. I think it's not possible to win money with a tool and come to explain afterwards you didn't understand how the tool worked.
No, I fully agree. In closing, tell us a little bit about how things happened at the Byline Fest, where you met a lot of these people that you've been interfaced with online mostly in real life. How was that?
I think that the Byline Festival is a great it's a great opportunity for everyone, and when I say everyone, I mean, of course, myself, but also the public, to get closer to the people bringing the news. It's a little bit, it's weird, but it's true. During this festival, everybody's together. There's no VIP section for the talkers or the speakers who are going to be hidden with a champagne glass. We are all in the same bar, we are all in the same restaurant, everybody's talking together. And we can see with the public that all of the work that we are doing has a much bigger impact than we could imagine. What do I mean? I mean that somehow when you work on the internet, you feel very lonely, you know?
Yes.
And you know this too, I suppose.
I do.
but somehow getting to this kind of festival, well, first you have a very, very high quality of performance, may that be in terms of the talks that are given by great journalists, great people from the cultural world, from the political world, great, really, really very interesting things. There is also a lot of very good music bands and artistic shows. So it's a place where you come to relax, of course, but it's also a place where you come and pick up some information for the coming year. And mostly, in my case, I took back a lot of very positive energy, a lot of encouragement. I don't know how to say it in English. Encouragement. Cheering kudos. From the people, yeah. And giving me a lot of strength to start again and start again on the what matters to the people. It doesn't mean they want to shut down all these big tech companies. We want more transparency. We want more responsibility from them, and we want some kind of a representative of the public interest to have some kind of weight on them, to have some power over them. But I know it's very difficult. You know, I realized something last week. Do you know who has more followers than Christianity on the world?
Either Rihanna or Justin Bieber.
No, it's Facebook.
Oh, you mean as a company? Oh, correct. Yes.
It's
yes.
Like who has more adepts, who has more believers than Christianity today in our century? Well, it's Facebook. It's something that didn't exist 15 years ago. So yes, it changes a lot of things. And places like Byline are a possibility for us to gather, to find some new people, to find some new angles on our investigation. And also, we were able to listen to the founder of Monty Python. John Cleese. And he told us something very, very funny that I want to share with your listeners before we leave. He asked us to imagine a world where the president of the United States of America never read a book in his own life. And we all laughed. And he said, no, it's not a joke. It's reality. And so we laughed, of course. But coming to a place with great minds and realizing that the one leading the world might never have read a book came as a surprise. And it's, I think, some kind of a good resume of what the Byline is bringing to you, some kind of a different perspective on the world and the possibility to meet clever people and listen to them while having a good time in the British countryside. And so, no, I think I really recommend everybody to gather up and get to the next Byline in August 2019. And see you there, and maybe the more generous will buy us a beer because we do not always have a lot of money.
That's true. Thank you, Thomas, for sharing all this. And we might invite you back as your next projects progress so we can check in and see where the investigation takes us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a very nice day.